Good evening and welcome to Sunday Potluck. This is Matt, and I have in the studio with me Lucy, who will be visiting with me, and we're going to be talking about natural history in Sitka and surrounding areas. So welcome, Lucy.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And I think first maybe we'll just talk about what's been going on this winter. Do you have any highlights from the winter that that you'd like to remember for the audience?
Well, in terms of birds or anything?
Anything.
Anything goes.
Birds especially. I know you're a bird fan. Yeah, well, so.
The first thing that comes to me is what's been happening at Swan Lake because of the tanager I saw in the fall.
Yeah.
You know, that first time that we saw a young tanager flying over the lake. That was kind of fun. But, and also the American coot that's been hanging out on Catland Street. I always go visit that guy or gal, whoever that is. The coot.
You do seem to have a fondness for the coots.
I do.
In Southeast Alaska, well, actually in Alaska in general, coots are considered rare. They have shown up every year that I've been paying attention on Swan Lake. And for many years before that, Swan Lake's actually probably one of the better places in the state to see them. Then when the lake freezes up, they disappear. And I guess you found them down at the grid down here on Catland Street.
That's
They've
right.
been hanging out down there.
That's right.
So, right?
Over by Totem Square on the saltwater.
Totem Square at the saltwater. So, yeah, one of the things that I'm interested in personally is bird observations. And I know around Sitka, there's quite a few people that pay attention. And for those that are interested, there's Sitka Birds email list. If you go to sitkanature.org, you can sign up for it there. And people send in reports of what they're seeing. And I'm also curious as to what people are seeing in outlying areas. I know you spent some time in Port Armstrong back before you were watching birds so
That's
much.
Right.
And I know that the listening area includes also other communities such as Yakutat and Cake and Angoon, Tenneke. And actually, one of the things that motivated me to want to do this show was I was going through the birds of Yakutat, and there was a publication for the birds of Yakutat, and there was pretty good information for spring and summer and fall. And then in the winter, there was all these things that I figured must be there but didn't show up on the list. And I think it's because the people who wrote it were naturalists or ornithologists that spent the summers up there, and maybe they would get there in the late spring and leave in the early fall. But they didn't see what was there in the winter. And so I'm curious as to what people are seeing. And I have never seen anything for Angoon or Cake or any of the other small communities around Southeast. So it's good information for Juneau and Ketchikan. Reasonable information for this, pretty good information actually for the Stikine area, Haines and Skagway, but not these smaller communities. So my hope is that people listening will share what they're seeing and birds and more as well. And to that end, I know I'm not prepared to take phone calls, but if people want to send an email, I'll monitor my email during the show here, and it's sitkanature@gmail.com. So if you send an email with an observation of something that you've seen or a question about natural history stuff, and I see it while we're on the air, I'll mention it and see if we can have a response to it. So you like the coot, the tanager, that wasn't the first time you've seen one.
No, though. The first time I saw one was the first summer I birded here, and thankfully Marge and Laura were there, and Tadine, and I ran from the parking lot over at Old Sitka and said, there's this bird that looks like its head was dipped in red ink. What is it?
That's a fun one. I have not seen one of those. So.
Yeah. Marge said it was only the third one she'd seen in 60 years of birding or 58 years of birding in Sitka.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was exciting.
And for those that don't know, Marge Ward and Marlis Tadine have been keeping bird records since 1980 when they first took an ornithology class.
Yeah.
On 5x7 note cards, I've seen all of them. There's a lot of them. And it's an amazing resource of when birds show up and you know, when they leave. And it's been fun to go through those and see those. And so Marge and Tadine are both sort of a font of information about birds and their occurrence here. So it is fun to talk to them. And Marge can often tell you what you saw if you can just kind of describe it to her, knowing what's around. So
and where you saw it too. Yeah, she's my major mentor. She and Tadine. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I first met them when I went to my first meeting for Christmas Bird Count. And,
yeah.
And they've been involved with that for a lot of years also.
Long time.
So.
Yeah.
I guess the highlights for me this winter have been the sharp-shin hawk that's been hanging around the neighborhood there, kind of the Bjorka Street, Edelin Street neighborhoods. there's been at least one, maybe two sharpshin hawks. Mm-hmm. It's been not a bad year for pine siskins, and the pine siskins have been getting caught by the sharpshin hawks, and my kids find feather piles down below the trees in the neighbor's yard. And yeah, it's been fun. I've had a chance to see sort of bird language in action. I'd heard about bird language before. You know, if you learn what the birds are saying, they can tell you that there's a predator around. Yeah. The other day I got home and the chickadees were acting kind of insistent and weird and calling. I mean, weird compared to what I'm used to. They're normally very active, but they were kind of staying in one spot and really kind of, I can't imitate the call very well.
Did they sound different?
They sounded a little different. I mean, I could tell they were chickadees, but they were different than their normal kind of cheery selves.
Right.
And I couldn't, it was in a dense pine tree in our yard, and I couldn't see anything, and I was trying to shift around, and I kept shifting around, trying to see up in there, and then I saw the hawk take off, and I think it had been eating a bird in the tree, and the chickadees were kind of going at it. So it's been fun. We don't get to see that here as intensely as you might in some other places where there's lots of those bird-eating raptors. So
it's amazing you get to see them in your neighborhood, which is right off Sommel Creek Road downtown.
Right.
So it's cool. The birds,
yeah.
The birds are everywhere.
Well, and you've had a Lincoln sparrow this winter.
I have. All winter at the condos over by C-Mart, there's somebody's been feeding faithfully. And we've had some sparrows all winter that don't usually stay at all. And the Lincoln sparrow. It was great to see all the different kinds of sparrows, because Lincolns are really little compared to fox sparrows or even song sparrows. And the golden-crowned sparrows are pretty big and fairly aggressive. So it's neat to see them all together.
Yeah, they join up for the winter. And so actually, in some ways, winter is a... There's not as many birds around songbird-wise, but there's better opportunities because they'll tend to be grouped around feeders.
That's right.
So people that feed, actually often rarities, will show up at feeders.
That's right. And they're not as territorial now as they will be pretty quick here when they're breeding and stuff.
Yeah, I've noticed the juncos are starting to get a little more aggressive mm-hmm. with each other, and I think they're getting ready to ship on out. Head upland, I guess, a little bit, perhaps.
Yeah, Laura's been hearing juncos over by the high school.
Singing.
Yeah, singing.
I went for a walk this morning, and I think in a little bit I'll play a couple of things I recorded
cool.
of birds singing. I haven't heard too many. I think the ones right in my neighborhood have been cowed by the sharpshin around. They don't want to get up and put themselves on a post where they can get plucked off.
No
so,
way.
It's a little bit risky for them maybe this year. But I've definitely, actually just down out here by the radio station this morning, there were three different song sparrows singing back and forth to each other. I think it seems like about every little pile of shrubs in town along the beach, there's a song sparrow that stakes it out as its home country.
Song sparrows so. Like downtown in Crescent.
Yeah, they seem to, and the rocky patches along the beach.
That's right.
So it's been fun to watch those.
And you can hear their songs on warm days right now, the warmer days, whatever warmer days we've had. Seems things are late right now, it seems like.
It seems like it. And that actually, that's it. So let's kind of talk about the weather a little bit. I grew up here in the 80s, And so my formative years and what I tend to base everything on was kind of the 80s. And in my sense, the last few winters, including this one, have been cold.
That's
and
right.
snowy. And but if you talk to somebody like Marge, for example, who's been around for 60 years and more, and she'd say, well, this is back like they used to be. This is mm-hmm. And I've heard other people who grew up here, grew up here in the 40s and 50s say, oh, these are like the winters I remember. These mm-hmm. are like... They're almost back to normal.
There you go. More snow, windier, colder.
Cold. And it's interesting to me. One of the things I'm fascinated by is variation in both time, over the years, decades, and those kind of cycles that go through, and also the space. So what's different between here and South Baranof or Angoon or mm-hmm. Yakutat, and how do things change? And so it's interesting to realize, we tend to be, in our own experience, we have our own memories and then our experience of growing up, for those of us who grew up here, and what that ends up constituting normal, even though it may only be a 5 to 10 year span, mm-hmm. Of what we sort of base everything else on. So it's interesting to hear people that have, and listen and talk to people that have been here for decades, and back in the old, when my parents moved here in the 70s, they talked about going up Blue Lake Road and getting snow in August from the avalanche chutes.
Right, there you go. That's different than now for sure.
Well, but the last couple of years, there was a couple of years where that in fact there was a lot of snow there all the way into the fall. So that's been kind of an interesting thing, but there certainly wasn't when I was a kid in the 80s. And so that's been that's been an interesting difference for me to notice. Mm-hmm. And this year it has seemed kind of cold. I noticed, it is warming up. There's getting to be more daylight. The blueberries are one of the first things that are coming out. I was down at Totem Park this morning, and the flowers weren't completely open, but there were several bushes that were, the flowers had dropped out. They were there, but they hadn't quite opened up.
Salmonberry leaves are starting to get fat buds now. They're just a little bit.
There was a few where I could just see the salmonberry flower bud coming out.
That's exciting.
The elderberry leaves were coming out of the out of the base there. I haven't seen any. I haven't been in places where skunk cabbage grows much lately, so I haven't seen any of those. Okay. But trying to think what other early flowers we might expect. But there seems like there's snow on the ground most places. Probably even out at Stargaven.
Especially at Stargaven. Even the road is cold and frozen still.
Yeah. So, so that's. I'm curious if people are in outlying areas. If it's, I would guess based on terrain that it's probably at least as cold or colder in Angoon and Cake and Yakutat is here.
It's usually warmer. I don't know.
Even in the winter?
Sometimes, yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. South Baranof, I wonder, I think we have listeners down in Port Armstrong and Port Alexander.
That's right. We'd love to hear from you guys.
I wonder if things get an earlier start down there.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
So I know you spent some time in...
5 years at Port Armstrong.
Port Armstrong.
Yes.
So do you have a sense of what was different there? I know you were paying attention to different things at the time. But,
well, the outstanding characteristic is that 1 year that we were there, we got 178 inches of rain. I mean, and that's normal for down there. They get much more rain than they do here. So
yeah,
I remember that clearly from the years we were there.
Somebody told me that Port Alexander gets more rain, but also has more sunny days. It just
that would depend. Yeah,
when it rains really hard.
Really hard.
And but there are more days like in the summer where there isn't where it'll be overcast here and it'll be clear down there.
Sure. So, well, Megan used to sit in the puddle in front of our house and play in the water with her boots. I mean, she'd fill her boots up and then empty them. She was 4 years old and she was doing that fun thing. So
yeah. It seems like was it Port Walter? I guess that's the weather station that's 200 over 200 inches a year.
Yeah, and they
Port
say
Walter.
back up behind in the valley where the watershed is for the lake back up there. It's even more than that.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't be. I guess as you go up in elevation,
the amount of rain increases.
So, yeah I'm kind of curious. I've heard that there's, well, it's been a couple of weeks since I heard that there was over 17 feet of snow on Verstovia still. So,
wow.
It's not going to be an early alpine season for those of us that like to get out and hike.
I mean, it's not.
At least those of us that like to get out and hike and not in the snow. So, I like to hike, but. Slogging through snow. I like to hike and see flowers and birds and things.
Well, I hear the avalanche danger is pretty acute right now up on top, too.
That one surprised me. I did see kind of on the slopes by Cross Mountain, where a big slab had cut loose this week.
That chute right by the second gate, right by Herring Cove.
So you spent a lot of time actually out at Medvici, too.
15 years
out at Medvici. So you've had some... remote living experience and let's see. So you're the one that kind of maintained the feeders there for years, hummingbird feeders.
Yeah, we had hummingbird feeders and we actually had at sometimes 3 and 4 feeders and 20 birds on a feeder. And Angie and Jamal have continued this tradition.
Oh, wow.
They keep hanging them up there. So they come through. The first week of April, usually there's somebody there.
It seems like that the hummingbirds often show up right around the time that
the
blueberries are opening up. And so could have some early arrivals anytime now.
And Bill Foster just told me about the Journey North website.
Oh, right,
if you Google Journey North, they'll tell you where the hummingbirds are on the West Coast and how usually it takes a week to get here if weather conditions are right. Centralia, Washington, our friend Greg Buell told us that the hummingbirds were there, and then a week later they were at Medvici. So.
And I think Medvici might be one of the early places that they show up, probably because you guys had feeders. It's not
any warmer there. The generations probably, oh no, it's colder. There's 2 feet. There's 2 feet of snow out there right now.
Oh, no.
It's very intense out there. So.
Yeah, and you get, I've hiked back there a little bit sometimes. It seems like the wind kind of funnels through there.
And sometimes it funnels through the valley and gets a little extra willy-wah down through and into Bear Cove, you bet.
Yeah.
Extra wind system, and it stays colder.
It's always, I mean, it's interesting to me in talking to you over the years about the things that you saw out at Medvici that, we wouldn't necessarily even see
in
town.
Yeah.
Bird wise, it seems like owls were pretty common out there.
Well, western screech owls, like Angie's been saying, she lays in bed in the house at night and she can hear the western screech owls. And that was normal for us, except for the last couple of years it wasn't before we moved back out here in 2008. They were getting a little more scarce. But they're back again. You could stand out on the dock and hear a couple of owls hoot back and forth at each other all the way around Bear Cove.
Oh, wow.
That was very fun. Yeah.
When I was living behind the Sheldon Jackson Museum, I would, if I listened out at night, and actually I set up a recording outfit to record out my window for many nights throughout a year. And the owls were, I think they weren't every night, but several times a month there would be owls that I would catch, sometimes way in the distance. So I think they like the park area, the screech owls. I've also talked to people that see them kind of in the neighborhoods, just between Sheldon Jackson and Bernoff, those neighborhoods there, they seem to frequent.
Those are birdie neighborhoods anyway.
Yeah,
and actually, like in general.
I saw my first screech owl in daylight this year right along Edelin Street there, and it was another bird language experience. The first day I'd been there for Christmas bird count the day before, and it had been pouring down rain, and there was no birds around anywhere. I saw maybe a dozen birds in the whole neighborhood. And then my kids and I were walking over to, I guess we're going to walk down to Totem Park, and these birds were just going nuts. There was a varied thrush and juncos, and they're all in the tree, and some chickadees, and they were all just going nuts up there. And I was like, there's got to be something over there. And my daughter, I said, there's got to be something in the bushes. My daughter says, oh, I'll go check. And so she walked over there and she looks around in the bushes, and there she goes, there's nothing here. And I'm like, there has got to be something. They wouldn't all be going nuts like that. And so I walked over a little bit and I looked at them, and they were all kind of, and actually people that teach bird language stuff that I know about, they describe it as a parabolic alarm, because the shape is kind of like a parabola above the predator.
All right.
And so for predators that they're afraid of, especially aerial ones, sharp-shin hawks would be an example.
Sure.
They're safer above because they can get away. If they're below it, then the raptor can drop down
on them. Pounce on it, or
very
whatever,
quickly.
Yeah.
So they'll form this kind of bubble zone, and the size of the threat level of the predator determines how big this zone of safety they feel like they need is. And so I kind of looked where they all were looking, and then sort of materialized out of the branch in the trunk of this screech owl. And you've probably seen pictures of screech owls, at least, and how cryptic they are. I mean,
they look like the bark.
Just turn into the bark somehow when they're sitting there. And it just sat there and was, I think, doing its best to ignore all the birds. And so we got to look at it, and we were all very excited.
How far away were you from it, in feet, maybe?
Oh, we walked right up to the base of the tree, and
That's
was probably 15 feet up in the
That's
tree.
Amazing.
So it was really pretty close. And it didn't concern us, or it didn't seem concerned by us, I should say. And so we took some pictures and a little video, and then kept on. And when we came back, the birds weren't alarming at it, but the owl was still there.
Still there.
Stayed there all day. So
it's so exciting to see those guys.
Yeah. Other than the snowy owl I saw a few years ago, it's the only owl I've seen. I know that there are other short-eared owls.
Linda Schmidt saw one of those short-eared owls. It flew right over their car, through over the windshield at the parking lot at the boat ramp at Old Sitka. Yeah, unexpectedly in the daytime.
They are daytime hunters. They like open country, which we don't have a lot of here.
That's for sure.
They used to be, they've been reported from the airport area, Alice Island, in the past. And the airport's kind of our one big open meadowy area, and it's a little restricted as to who gets to go out there. So we don't always know. One time I stood on the sand pile there in the fall and saw shorebirds. And when a car would drive by, the shorebirds would hop from one place to the other place. But I couldn't. They were too far away
too
to tell exactly what they were. But I think they were stopping there instead of on the beaches. And of course, they would be breeding up north in the tundra and stuff. And so in the springtime, I think they really favor the beaches. But I think in the fall, they'll hit other open places like alpine and
meadows whatever, and estuaries.
Yeah, all those places.
Sure.
So, it's kind of fun. But you reported an owl also from Totem Park that I haven't seen, which is a saw-whet owl.
That saw-whet owl, and I had Rich with me, and he's a much better spotter than I am. I walked right by it, and he said, look at that thing, and it looked like a piece of deer hair maybe 4x6 or something stuck to an alder branch, and it was had to have been 20 degrees. It was one of those days, and the wind was blowing. We were out on the point, and the little bird just sat and watched us for as long as we were there, and then we walked on.
Yeah.
But it was just great.
That was one of those cold days in January.
Very cold day. Yeah, and it was surprising, but it was right there, just like gray deer here.
Yeah, that's one I'd like to see. I haven't. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to occur around here, and there's only been a couple of reports of them over the years.
Yeah,
and I think maybe that's the second or third since I've been birding here. Mm-hmm. I know there've been some prior to that.
What about those northern pygmy owls that we hear with the hoot? They just make two hoots, and then there's a wait, and then they two hoots, right?
The pygmy owls they'll do steady
mm-hmm.
calls, and they're okay. active during the day.
Yeah, they're other day hunters for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have heard one of those, but I haven't seen one.
I heard one too.
They're considered rare in the state.
I love that.
And they are rare here. I heard one at Blue Lake last year. Somebody reported one, I think, off Verstovia Street. So
oh,
it was
okay.
kind of at the upper end, at the end of Verstovia Street there, sure. in that area. Great horned owls are another one that is in the area, but they seem to prefer their habitat also isn't very common here.
Mm-hmm.
I found feathers of one.
One way you know when they're there is when the jays are making a lot of racket and there doesn't seem to be a reason, there might be an owl in the tree where they are.
That's true.
Just like harassing, you know, ravens harass eagles is the same thing.
So it's always, if you hear birds acting really agitated and you can't quite tell why, it's always a good idea to go check. Because you never know what you might find hiding there. On the other hand, jays have been known to alarm at nothing just
because they're into it.
Yeah, I think sometimes they can say, well, let's see if we can trick this person into coming over here and looking.
Yeah.
But when the bird language trainers that do their courses, they give what they call the corvid disclaimer. So your crows, your jays, your mm-hmm. magpies, your ravens, they just like to have fun sometimes. And so...
Don't we know it?
Yeah,
sure.
It can be very difficult to start to get to where you can interpret what they're trying to do. Although, you know, they do like to chase raptors, and I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
There was a northern goshawk. I first heard about it from somebody who lives right across the street from Sika Community Hospital. He'd called Marge, and Marge had him call me to let me know about it. And it was he didn't know what it was at the time, but it was a juvenile goshawk, and it was on top of his chicken pen. And he had, fortunately for his chickens, he had a fence mm-hmm. over the top, chain link fence over the top. So it was on top of that, and it was just kind of sitting there. And
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't have known about it, except he heard his chickens going crazy. He said they were acting. He just heard them sounding really agitated and upset. And so he went out to take a look, and it was this bird. And when he came out, the bird flew off a little ways, and but he was still able to get a good look at it, and it mm-hmm. was a juvenile goshawk. And, you know, the next week, actually, I saw it fly by, and like I say, we've had that sharpshin hawk in the neighborhood, and they're related. I don't see either of them very often. This is only the second time I've seen a goshawk, but it was interesting how much larger the goshawk much bigger,
mm-hmm.
Than had the eyebrow stripe.
Oh,
so it was nice to get a good look at those and get some pictures. My strategy for learning things is to take pictures and figure
That's
it
right.
out when I get home. So,
we saw a great horned owl when we were out at not Port Armstrong, but Hidden Falls Hatchery. We were living out there. There was a sick one, and Megan and I brought it to town. We actually were able to catch it and bring it to town, and it died because it was dehydrated, but they gave us another great horned owl that had been attacking chickens in Gustavus.
Oh, yeah.
So we relocated her. We called her Gussie, and we relocated her to Port Armstrong, to Hidden Falls. And she stayed there for as long. We were there for another couple of years, and she was still there when we left.
Oh,
so
that's
interesting. That was great, yes.
Yeah.
It's a niche.
So you've hit both two of the east side hatcheries there, Port Armstrong
and Hidden Falls.
And Hidden Falls.
That's right. That's right.
Was there a lot of difference between the two in terms of weather and
yes,
birds
definitely.
And stuff?
Well, there the weather for sure, because Hidden Falls gets so much snow. It's down there by Bear Enough Warm Springs, and sometimes they'll get 25 feet of snow. And there's a lot of, for people who are caretaking at Bear Enough Warm Springs especially, there's a lot of snow. There's a lot of snow blowing and shoveling snow off the boardwalk, you know. And Port Armstrong would get the South Chatham storms, so we'd get these storms where snow would accumulate and drift, but it wouldn't pile up, not the years that we were there anyway, but the way it does on the maybe it's just the mountains are a lot higher than they are at the end of the island, but they get a little more pile up of snow over the wintertime at Baranof Warm Springs and at Hidden Falls.
I imagine it's also a lot colder as you get up because you get more of the interior.
Maybe so.
Armstrong's really pretty far down there to the south.
It's almost, almost at the end of the island. And also that big wind tunnel that comes from Lynn Canal down into Chatham, you know, that's a pretty strong, ceaseless blow all winter long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frigid.
I've been reading, there's a book about Northwest weather, which the author is from University of Washington, Cliff Mass. He has it's actually a really interesting weblog that he writes about, and he focuses on Washington and Oregon, and he talks about the complications of the Cascades and the Olympics and Puget Sound and mm-hmm. how all the terrain factors and
sure.
stuff blowing over from the east side and coming in, making landfall in these convergent zones where the mountains split the wind and then it wraps around and then there's enhanced precipitation in the convergent zones. And and then I think, well, boy, you translate that to Southeast Alaska, which is even more complex
sure.
topographically and how much little microclimate there must
Got
be
it.
Going on in one place versus another. And
well, it's like that wind coming down the Medvegi Valley. That's very localized, but it has a big effect on what happens at Medvegi and out of Bear Cove and into Silver Bay. It's that same kind of thing.
Yeah. One of the things that I've, looked at in the past is they make these little eye buttons. I think they're mainly manufactured for food transportation. If you need to make sure your food stayed cold, and it'll record
oh,
the temperatures.
Okay.
But they work just as well for recording outside temperatures too.
Okay.
So I've put some out in various places, and one of the things that was interesting was how cold Stargaven was.
Oh, it's always cold
relative
yeah.
to the airport. So the airport's sort of the baseline. It's where
sure.
our weather records are kept now, and Stargaven Valley was, I think, at the coldest on the cold days in winter, was consistently 5 to 10 degrees colder at night than mm-hmm. than the airport was.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was really interesting to me was I put one eye button down by the rifle range, so in the bottom of the valley, and I
right.
put another one right at the edge of the clear cut, right where so up about 200 feet probably,
mm-hmm.
where it went back to Big Forest.
Right.
And the temperature difference there at night was substantial. It
really?
Was much colder in the valley bottom than it was up there, just that 200 feet.
Cold settles.
Yeah, right. So the cold, I think, just settles down into that valley there. It doesn't have anywhere to go, really, so it just
right.
kind of hangs in there, and it was the upslope there a little bit was pretty similar to the airport in terms of temperature,
really?
and down in the valley it was just mm-hmm. like an ice box.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, obviously deer would know about this,
yes.
I would think, and so you know, it makes me wonder if you were to collar a deer
mm-hmm.
And watch where it went at night, or
right.
in some way track the deer.
Probably
deer's
has
movement.
Its bed up there 100 feet up or 200 feet up because
yeah.
it's warmer.
Right, and I'm curious, you know, generally speaking, as you move up in elevation,
it gets colder.
Expect to get colder. I think
sure.
the rule of thumb is like 3 degrees per thousand
mm-hmm.
feet or something like
sure.
that. And so I wonder where that starts to take over. So it'd be interesting sometime to do a like every 50
yeah.
feet of elevation, see where's the cold pocket and how, you know, I suppose it's different depths at different
yeah.
times. And then how far up do you go before you start noticing the
sure.
elevation decrease?
That reminds me of the birders that I had on birding tours from Tucson. They would tell me in the summertime they would go up, and every 1,000 feet the temperature would drop, like you say. And so it would be 100 degrees in Tucson, and it would go into the 90s as you went up there. And, of course, the whole birding scenario would change, which is different from here, of course.
And that all sounds a little warm for my blood. But
me too. It is warm for your blood.
Yeah.
Some people here are lizards, though. They like that.
They like the heat.
That's right.
Yeah, when it gets up into the 70s here, I feel...
Too hot.
I feel like that's a little warm.
So tell me, have you been seeing any migration patterns out at Bjorka or any of those places? You've been hearing anything?
I have. Because of the weather this year, I haven't really looked too much at Bjorka radar. So Bjorka radar is the weather radar that's out on Bjorka Island. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the things you can actually do is see birds migrating. If it's not raining, of course, if it's raining, then
Forget it.
The rain. But and actually, in the lower 48, where you have a lot more weather radar coverage, you can watch especially on the East Coast, where they have these major migration events,
like
that go
the hawks,
with fronts.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and the song warblers also will move with the weather fronts.
Okay.
And it's much less distinct on the West Coast, but you can actually watch, and there's so many night migrants. And I've seen this actually happen at the peak migration time in the spring and in the fall. As you know what time sunset is, and you watch that you can get a little animated thing of the last few radar scans. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that, you'll see this kind of bloom of things going into the air. And it follows the southern coast, outer coast of Baranof Island, and it comes down kind of through Olga and Neva Strait. So So between Kruzov and Baranof, you see this. And sometimes in especially heavy ones, they're actually coming over Kruzov as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a radar shadow from Mount Edgecombe.
Okay.
So you can kind of see that in there. And I also think I've seen the storm petrels coming in and out of St. Lazaria.
That's just wonderful.
That's a much smaller kind of movement.
Sure.
But I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of them. So,
do you have sound records out there too, so you can hear what's going over?
I don't.
Oh,
that would be an interesting thing to do.
Great.
Is to set up a lot of the migrating songbirds, especially call. They do night flight calls, which is actually the reason I set up my recorder out my window before. It's because I wanted to. If you're walking out in the fall, especially on an evening when there's low clouds and you hear these birds just cheeping, those are migrating songbirds.
God,
sparrows,
that's so cool.
And of course the geese are, you can hear those.
You can hear geese. People, yeah, that's a very familiar sound.
People recognize those.
And
so,
the swans.
So speaking of migration, our first migrants have arrived. The first migrants are the gulls, and they show up. It's unclear how many of them are actually moving from south, but the herring gulls are mostly absent in the winter.
Right.
And have started to show up again in more numbers. So I'm pretty confident those are coming from south. Obviously, when they start longlining season, things concentrate in the channel because there's food to eat. So that's a good place.
But the longtails, are the longtails gone?
They're still there.
I've been looking and looking, but there's so much traffic right there in the channel and then on the other side of the breakwater that I haven't seen them
in
the last few days.
So the longtails spend the winter there.
Right.
And they, when the gulls show up around this time of year, when longline season starts, herring really get going, then the gulls will disperse a little more because they'll be out where the herring are spawning.
That's right.
But the longtails kind of move out around that time, and they get harder to see. I think the gulls might be bullies, and so they sort of disperse.
They are.
So the gulls there are, but I saw this last week, there were still 50 down kind of. Another thing is that the gulls are bigger, so the long tails kind of blend in a little bit.
That's true, and they dive in huge groups, so they pop up later. But
So the long tail ducks are still around. I don't think the swans maybe have moved off.
The ones at Swan Lake have seemed to have gone.
So we had about a dozen swans at
Stargavin and four at Swan Lake over here.
Four at Swan Lake. There was one that was at Totem Park from time to time. Actually, I heard an interesting story about that. I was talking to somebody who was out there at Totem Park videoing things and taking pictures, and he watched the swan stirring up the gravel in the estuary. And the swan was pulling out eggs, yolk sac fish and
Ailibans,
and eating
salmon.
Them.
Sure.
And the mergansers, the common mergansers, came in over and they were trying to steal a bite, and the swan was not happy about that. And the swan, he told me that the swan's bill was as big as the merganser head and bill put together, and it would just grab them by the neck. It grabbed one by the neck and just threw it around. Had another one by the wing and another one by the tail feathers, and finally the mergansers figured out that they could only come in when the swan's head was underwater.
Very good.
And they had to clear out very quickly otherwise. But I thought it was interesting that I hadn't realized that swans would stir up the gravel and get out the...
Well, the gulls are doing it, and the mallards do it, and the mergansers do it, and then, of course, the dippers are in there eating those things too. The salmon are feeding everybody.
It seems that way. And
sure.
It is interesting to watch what stays around in the winter. And of course, when the lake's frozen, Swan Lake's frozen, then things get pushed out to salt water. And So yeah, it's interesting. Oh, but the other migrant, so the gulls, mm-hmm. and I think the waterfowl have started to move, the ducks sure. and so forth. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the earlier migrants. But today I saw a robin.
And yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was a migrating, it was a male, mm-hmm. Much darker red.
Sure.
It was at Totem Park along the river, and so I think it probably had just flown in, would be my guess. And there was a dipper was singing there, and maybe it came to check out the dipper singing, I don't know. But I had heard from in Ketchikan, the robins had just started showing up in numbers.
So very good.
The last couple of days, there's been a lot of robins, I guess, mm-hmm. showing up at Ketchikan. The swans have been moving through.
Right. I haven't heard a varied thrush yet, though. I haven't. Have you?
I haven't. You know, the last varied thrush I heard was actually the one alarming at that owl.
Okay.
And this has not been a good winter for varied thrushes around here.
They haven't been showing themselves to us at any rate.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm sure there's still some around, but one of the things I read about them is they have a cyclic pattern. I think it was every other year. If you look at Christmas bird counts, then the abundance varies every other year.
Okay.
Or feeder watch is mm-hmm. another place that you can see that. But the abundance of varied thrushes is variable from year to year. And this is some years, you know, there's a lot of them at feeders.
Oh, yeah.
And this year it seems like not so much.
November they disappeared and I haven't seen one at all.
Yeah, we had that a lot of snow in Sitka anyway in November. Mm-hmm. When we broke the record for snowfall
That's
in November.
Right.
Then it warmed up in December. And so it was interesting. I think early snow might scare some songbirds off and say, well, we're getting out of here.
Yeah.
But other ones show up that you wouldn't see. Like there was a good flock of red poles, which we don't see in winters that it isn't snowy.
Well, they like the snow. They like the cold. Marge told me they come into Juneau with the snow. And then if it's still snowing over here, they'll make their way over here.
Come this way.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
then Bohemian Waxwings came
oh,
in.
Yeah.
They were
that
here
was great.
In November.
And then
but then
gone.
They left.
Right.
And so those are a couple of species that seem to show up. I guess the other really sort of unusual bird this winter that hung around Sitka was the Anna's hummingbird, which
you
did get to see.
I did
right?
see it. It was at Greg Johnstone's place over at those condos on DeGroff.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know there was, I'm pretty sure there was one that wintered in Yakutat a couple of
right.
years ago, I remember hearing about.
But that one disappeared at the end of January, and then a female showed up. And then these are Anna's hummingbirds, which is unusual for here.
Right.
And then she disappeared, and there hasn't been anybody.
Since February.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
And so I think when they first showed up, there were three of them in November. And,
right.
And so they actually came by. I set up a feeder in December. and they visited my feeder a couple times, even after the first of the year. But then we had that really cold snap in
yeah.
January, and I never saw them again after that. So I don't know mm-hmm. if that killed off a couple of them or,
right.
or what exactly happened to them. But it's a little surprising to see this bright colored hummingbird. I heard they were visiting the lights over at the Pioneer Home.
Doesn't surprise me. anything bright and red.
Bright red
will
stuff.
Do. Yeah.
So it was warm enough. They were feeling bold and adventurous and wandering around town
sure.
to see what they could find. So,
did you ever figure out where the ringneck ducks were going when Swan Lake froze?
Right. So So one of the things that I'm interested also in, I guess, is all these questions of curiosities. You know, I'm
very good curiosities.
I'm interested in what people are curious about, and I have several long-standing questions, some of which I am eventually able to answer, but the ringneck ducks are one of them. Ringneck ducks we see here in winter fairly often. They show up in the fall on Swan Lake, and
sure.
sometimes I've seen 30 or more of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's 30 is a pretty good number for Swan
it's big,
Lake.
Yeah.
But routinely a dozen or more.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the lake freezes, they disappear.
They go somewhere else.
And we don't see them, hardly see them on the saltwater. I've seen them on the saltwater twice.
Mm-hmm.
And like one each time, actually,
mm-hmm.
on the saltwater. When the lake opens up again, there's, so far in my experience, there's never been as many as there was initially.
Right.
But there's always more than I ever see on saltwater. So
right.
there's 5 to 10, you
mm-hmm.
know, after the lake opens up again, even if it's not completely open.
Right.
So they're going somewhere. I have seen them on Indian River, and somebody else reported, again, one on Indian River. I saw three on Indian River
mm-hmm.
a few years ago during a cold snap. So maybe they're just moving to freshwater streams.
Sure.
But on other occasions, I haven't seen them on Indian River when I've gone looking for them. So
right.
So that's one of those sort of mysteries that's still out there.
Long-standing question.
It's been a question in my mind for years now. I just, you know, kind of nurse it along and try and pay attention. There's several of those that way. It's kind of what's fun. It's investigating.
Well, how about the crossbills? That's another curious one. They disappeared last year. I haven't seen or heard one since last spring.
They are notorious for being an eruptive species.
An eruptive species.
They follow the food crops. They'll nest any time of year.
That's right, if they have food.
If they have food.
That's
and
right.
So they'll follow the cone crops. I haven't seen a red crossbill or a white-winged crossbill for quite a while. Pine siskins were pretty good this year. Mm-hmm. Some years they're completely gone. Another species that's known to erupt. The snowy owls in other places were good, but
they've been amazing. My friends Carol and Gary called me from the Oregon coast 2 weeks ago, and they were watching seven snowy owls.
At once. I saw a really, it was kind of a fun picture of a snowy owl on the anchor on a bow of a boat out off Kruzov. You could kind of see the outside coast of Kruzov at one edge of the picture, but there's just this fierce-looking owl riding on the boat.
Amazing.
I don't know what they were doing out there, but it must have been a late fall picture
out there.
I've
never seen one. I'd love to see one.
Yeah,
I'd love that.
Well, kind of like you and your Western Tanager. One showed up one of the early years I was birding. And
that's right. It's, what are you going to do? And the Western Bluebird, or not the Western, the Mountain Bluebird that I saw at Medvigi, you know.
That was one of maybe three records ever for Sitka.
That's right.
And I think the only one, that was a fall record.
That was a fall.
That was the only one in the fall.
God, it was raining so hard, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was pouring days of rain, and there was this bird doing something weird.
So, that brings up another issue, is that when you're just starting, you don't know what's unusual, and you see all sorts of things that, or I shouldn't say you see all sorts of things, but you see things, and because you've never noticed before, like I saw red-breasted nuthatch, it was coming to my feeders routinely, one of the first years I was birding, and it was there all the time, so I thought it must be pretty common, but I've seen one once since.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
And I know that, I think, as I recall, you posted to the Sitka Birds email list, and most of the post was about what you'd seen at Stargavin. And then there was this kind of this aside, and by the way, there was this
one
mountain
sentence, bluebird
that's been out at the Medvici for the last week.
And then, Ed Clark jumped on it, the guy that's the rare bird guy. He wrote me a letter, and he says, I think maybe you're seeing something unusual. Would you send me your notes? You know, so back and forth.
Well, that's where I remember emailing you back, and it's like, you're sure that's, we studied it. And I looked in the Birds of Alaska, and it says they're uncommon in Southeast, so I figured that was no big deal. And I was like, uncommon in Southeast, because they show up in Juneau and Skagway and Haines, but they almost never show up here. So so for those of you out there that see something that you know, you might not necessarily assume is unusual. There may be people interested in seeing it.
So give them the website again for that, for your bird list.
SitkaNature.org, SitkaNature as one word, .org. And you can sign up for the bird list there, or, leave a comment on the page and I'll get that. Lucy's now one of those people who would desperately like to hear about these unusual birds.
I love hearing about any unusual bird.
So she can go chase it down. We got to see a Townsend solitaire this winter.
Oh, that was wonderful. In fact, Matt and I had been talking about that bird at the Larkspur Cafe, and I told him how much I wanted to see one. And 4 days later, I got a call on a Sunday afternoon. He says, well, there's a... And it was downtown. It was at Crescent Harbor. And sure enough, it stuck around long enough for me to come down and look at it.
Yeah, it was just that one day.
Beautiful gray bird with a varied thrush-colored wing, you know. It was cool.
I ran into some other folks down there doing a walk that was very clearly a walk of there's something interesting here.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of trailed them a little bit and put my binoculars on the tree where they were looking. And I was like, that's a bird I haven't seen before. And
it was some special very red berry. Well, I can't remember the name of the berry. Kitty told us what it was.
But. It was an ornamental berry there.
It liked that particular berry.
And that's where it had been that day. I looked for it the next couple of days and never saw it again.
Yeah.
So it moved on. But that was one that hasn't been seen here very much.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun to see that one.
So
yeah, there's and you're on a quest to get your 200 species.
I do. I want to get my 200 species. That means you see 200 birds in Alaska.
In 100.
It's called the Alaska 200 Club. You can Google that, by the way, and the whole thing comes up.
Alaska 200 Club. You get a Stellar's Jay patch.
That's right.
Stellar's Jay was the first bird documented in Alaska by Western science, by Stellar back in the
with Vitus Bering. It's 1741.
Yeah. It's been a couple of years. And so they documented that one and named it after Stellar. And
that's how they knew they were in the New World.
The Stellar's Day.
Yeah.
So, you get a little patch, and my goal is to get 200 species in Sitka. It's going to take me
longer,
a few more years. I'm up to all the easy ones.
So you're up to the easy ones.
I have all the ones that just show
well,
up.
Easy for Sitka, maybe.
Right. Yeah. There's a few things that we see here that other people don't see. It's always fascinating. You've done the birding hike tours. Hike tours for birding out at Stargavin. And so you get birders from out of state.
All they want to see is a chestnut-backed chickadee and a harlequin duck. I mean, they want that one bad, you know, those two birds especially.
I've heard also varied thrush is a popular one.
Yes, that's another one.
Red-breasted sapsucker, all these kind of northwest coast.
Right. And our winter wren, our Pacific wren, excuse me.
No.
Yes.
And so it's interesting, you get somebody from Texas or wherever, and well, because I went with one group of Elderhausen people that wanted to go birding, and they're like, well, what can we see? I was like, well, just the usual stuff. I don't know. What do you want to see? And they're like, oh, red-breasted sapsucker. I go, we can do that.
We can do that.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, one woman told me that she lives in Texas, and she said routinely she'd go out in her backyard and count 65 birds during migration time. And we're lucky if we ever see that in a big day here. I mean, you'd have to work hard and go from one end of the road to the other.
65 species.
65 species. That's a lot of different birds.
Well, I've been keeping track of my species a little better this year, and I'm up to 74, I think, for the year.
For the year.
For birds, so far. 74 for the year. Yeah,
That's great.
I set myself a couple of projects this year. One is my 1,000 species project, which I want to...
That's not just birds, folks.
No, it's not just birds, right. 1,000 species of plants, animals...
Fungus,
critters,
lichens.
And it's going to take all of
insects.
Them. Insects. Yeah, I've been taking pictures of flies lately. There's actually been a surprising number of flies around.
Well, you know those things, those little flies that fly out of the snow.
Right.
Those caddisflies or whatever, those stone flies or whatever
flies,
they are.
Yeah. And those are kind of fun.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the things that fascinates me is it's really easy. I went down to the beach with my kids the other day, and I've kind of avoided the beach. It's this big, the intertidal, there's a lot of stuff there, and it's like, I can't tell what it all is. And so one of the things, and that's one of the reasons for doing this 1,000 species project is to say, well, this is going to motivate me to actually look at some of these things. It's easier to just kind of go, oh, well, that's just something down at the beach.
Do you care if you can identify them, or do you just want to know that they're different from each other?
I want to know that they're different from each other because I'm not going to be able to identify everything. I'm not going to be able to identify all the flies, for example.
Is that because all the stuff hasn't been classified in Alaska?
It's entirely possible that there are several species of insects here and actually likely that there are species of insects here that are not described. I know there are species of intertidal stuff that's not described. And it's not hard to find those in because they're just not very well studied groups. And so I want to be able to distinguish them and recognize them is basically what I go for. I'm not a taxonomic specialist. So it's nice to get a name, but I don't have to have a name.
Okay.
So that's
1,000 species, and then
1,000 species, and then I thought, well, you know, that's really general and diverse. I should also focus and try and get a better understanding and connection to one species. So then I also have the one species 1,000 times project.
Whoa!
So now, and I thought, well, I could do a tree, but that's in some ways that'd actually be harder because I'd feel like it's not enough to just look at a tree 1,000 times, right? I got to try and come up with 1,000 different observations of a tree, which might be a good project, but I wasn't up to that one yet. So I thought, well, a good species, I need one that's relatively common, close to home.
Okay.
And it's
diverse.
I picked a song sparrow, actually, because around town you see them all the time. So I've been working harder to pay attention to where the song sparrows are and what they're doing.
Okay.
So like this morning I walked around and was looking for them singing. I think I'm going to try and see if I can, between the park and the end of Lincoln Street and kind of the neighborhoods along there, see if I can get a sense of the song sparrow territories, you know, and where they're singing. So this morning when I was down here by the radio station, actually, there were 3 song sparrows singing. There's just a little parking lot there between the bridge and the Raven Radio building.
Sure.
Just that little parking lot there. Mm-hmm. And there's a patch of pine trees there for landscaping, and there was a song sparrow singing there. Across the road to Castle Hill, there was another one, and they were singing and forth. And then there was a third one that was right next to the city mm-hmm. office building across, is this Harbor Drive still here, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. With the intersection, though.
Yeah, the intersection there, right at the end of Lincoln Street. And so there was a third one singing there. So they were all singing back and forth this morning.
In the Pioneer Home, there's that little tree on the corner right across mm-hmm. from Harry Race. There's usually, in the summertime, there's usually a song sparrow on top of that talking, singing.
Yeah, there was one when I walked downtown the other day. There was one singing right there. And so so I created myself a little Google map online where I'm marking where I'm hearing them singing. And so, yeah, it's going to take a little bit of, it's a project that I don't necessarily expect to, it's not like I have to write a report on it or anything. So it's just it's kind of a for fun thing. And mm-hmm. originally I thought, well, I'll be able to see song sparrows at my house. And so I'll be able to pay attention to them. And there are song sparrows, right? My neighbors have a bunch of crab pots that they're stored in their yard. And the problem is they can't see the song sparrows because they're down. I think they stay down in the bottom of the
There's got to be a lot of good food down there at the bottom of that
I would think
pile.
That there's food there, and then my kids have set up feeders, right, so they kind of come under the fence and get the food from the feeders and go back.
Oh, okay.
But I think with the sharp shin hawk, they've been hanging out really low.
Oh, yeah.
And
good protection.
Avoiding the chance of getting eaten. So I haven't really seen the song sparrow at my house very much so far this year.
Right.
Maybe I haven't seen the hawk in a few days, so it may have decided to move on, and so maybe I'll start seeing the song sparrow.
Well, the other thing about song sparrows is they look so different. There's so much variation within the song sparrow species. Some of them are very white, some of them are very gray. The farther north you go, the Aleutian ones get bigger and darker. But even just right here, there's like I saw 7 song sparrows, and they were each of them very different from each other.
Yeah, I haven't got to the point where I can recognize them. I suppose if I saw the same ones again and again, mm-hmm. I would become able to recognize them as individuals.
Well, that'd be cool.
That they've done studies. There's actually been a long-term study in Discovery Park, I think in Seattle, mm-hmm. of song sparrow territories and songs.
Oh, okay.
And so they look at the songs of the song sparrows, and the different songs that they sing.
Right.
And so song sparrows, like all songbirds, learn their songs. Mm-hmm. And so one of the questions is, do they learn them from their parents or do they learn them from the neighbors?
Right.
Basically. And if I'm remembering correctly what I read, the song sparrows learn the songs from the neighbors more than the parent
really?
Bird. And yeah, so I'm interested in these song sparrows, and so I recorded a few of them this morning, their songs, and I might, it's with a spectrogram on the computer, it's pretty easy to look at the different song variants, and it remains to be seen whether I end up having time to look at that more, but in that much detail, I should say. But yeah, it's one of my projects, at least to make 1,000 observations. Yeah, so we're running close to the end of time here. We got another 3 minutes left or so. Is there anything, is there anything you're looking forward to coming up in the next spring's right around the corner?
Well, I just want to hear a winter wren song again and see a winter wren and watch the ouzels make their nests. I mean, the dippers make their nests, you know, and it just kind of, I just like that old familiar thing when things start happening, spring things start happening. And like last year at this time, I'd already had a day where I'd seen 53 species in one day. And I mean, it's just slow right now. I love seeing all the birds that I see on the routes that I see, but I'm looking forward to the spring developments.
Yeah. 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 Theoretically it's officially spring already, but it's a little slow here for us. I'm looking forward to adding some plants and flowers mm-hmm. to my list of species for the year. I've got, like I say, I saw the blueberries are just kind of opening up. It'll be fun when the spring migrants arrive in greater force, and warm weather is always a plus. So those are all be good.
I wanted to say too that people who are checking your emails for postings and stuff, make some yourselves. It seems like the postings have really fallen off, and that if there's something you want to know from anybody, put the question out to the email and see what kind of responses you get, or say what you've been seeing. Somebody just did a 2-sentence one about the 14 oyster catchers down at Totem Park, and that was terrific. And then everybody was out looking for them. So yeah, if you have something to add or you have a question, just get on there and ask it.
Yeah, it's always fun to, I know I used to post a little more often than I do lately, but it's always fun to, especially once spring starts coming up, the shorebirds will be coming here shortly, and we'll be seeing, well, let's see, in the next couple of weeks, we should see a lot more robins. The fox sparrows should be coming through. By the middle of April, we should have pretty decent numbers of shorebirds. And the peak seems to be the last week of April and the first
week
of
May at Totem Park,
where we can see a lot of shorebirds.
Yeah.
Songbirds, swallows seems like they're in April. Townsend's warbler usually the end of April. Hermit thrushes beginning of May. So. Lots of birds to look forward to.
And the loons should be showing up on the freshwater lakes before too long
now.
That's
true too, yeah.
Like Beaver, keep an eye out at Beaver Lake and Thimbleberry Lake for red-throated loons, if you can believe that. The old timers tell me they've seen them there when it was still snow on the ground, like this year. So.
Well, it's got to be open water for them.
That's for sure.
There isn't a lot of that right now.
Not right now. It's true.
Well, thanks for coming and visiting with me this evening.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been fun. I should take us out here. This is KCAW Sitka. We'll be, I guess, coming up next is the This American Life.
There you go.
Be coming on in just a moment. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.